Our next presenter is going to talk about what's blowing in the wind. And actually, in Saskatchewan, we don't have, it's kind of nice, there's not much wind blowing. There's a bit of rain, but it can be quite windy. But what's blowing in the wind, tuberculosis and long-term care? Our next presenter, I'd like to introduce, is Ruth Ann Apple. She is an RN who has worked in as a manager in many different clinical areas. She's currently the manager of TB Control Saskatchewan out of the Saskatoon Health Region. Her most recent experience relates to respiratory medicine, working with inpatient TB patients and chronic disease management. She's participating with First Nations organizations, the ministry, and Northern Regional Health Authorities on TB strategies. Without further ado, I'll give you Ruth Ann.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to come and talk to you here today about TB and long-term care. So before I really get started, I'm like Colette. I'm employed by the health region, and I don't have any other income from any other source, so I have nothing to disclose. So my objectives today are to give an overview of tuberculosis, talk about risk factors and how it presents, describe screening practices, management of tuberculosis, and then do a long-term care case study. So what's the concern about TB and long-term care? Well, really, it's based on there's a large number of residents who live in close environment, so they have frequent and prolonged contact. Residents may be more susceptible due to age or an impaired immune system. So there's always risk factors associated there. But the good thing is that TB is very infrequent in long-term care. It's not a common occurrence. So just a brief review of the pathophysiology. TB is caused by Mycobacterium tuberculosis. It's spread through the airborne method by droplet nuclei, so through any type of forceful exhalation, so sneezing, coughing, shouting, anything like that. It's not spread through surfaces. It's just strictly through the airborne mechanism. It has to be inhaled. The droplet nuclei, which contain the mycobacterium, can remain in the air for several hours, like 11 hours or even longer. So it's something that is a concern when you've got new case or a case that you're not aware of, and it hasn't been diagnosed, patient hasn't been isolated. When the bacilli is inhaled, they enter the alveoli, and the body's immune system takes over. Macrophages engulf the bacilli, try to eradicate it. The bacilli are transported to the hilar lymph nodes, and the CD4 T helper lymphocytes are recruited. So if the bacterium is not eradicated, as long as the immune system is healthy, there's a complex response that's triggered, leading to the formation of granulomas. So as long as all the components of the health system are intact, the CD4 count is healthy, the wall of the granuloma is built, and then it's also maintained. If the wall is not able to be maintained and it breaks down or can't be formed, then the bacteria escape, and they replicate and spread throughout the body, causing disease. If the immune system is healthy, the granulomas contain the bacteria, and this results in what we know as latent TB infection. The good news is, though, that there's only a 10% lifetime risk of development of disease in individuals who have a healthy immune system. So 5% occurs within the first 2 years after exposure, and 5% in the 2 years after exposure to throughout the rest of the lifetime. So that's what makes TB a difficult thing to deal with, because someone may be exposed when they're age 15 and not actually develop disease until they're in their 70s or 80s. So one of the things that we need to do when we're looking at TB is to have a bigger global picture. So recognizing where do people come from? Because what happens is that various areas of the world, as you can see through this map. There's the greater risk that the environment people are coming from will increase their risk to exposure. So this would be for residents in long-term care, as well as the staff who are working in the facilities. So this picture is the estimated TB incidence rate in 2010. And I know the numbers are really hard to see here, but looking at North America, which is the light green, the case rate is 0 to 24 per 100,000 population, whereas as you go through the darker greens going down to Africa and over into Indonesia and the Philippines through there, you're looking at a case rate of over 300 per 100,000. So that's a concern that as our new Canadians, as our immigration is changing the demographics of our population, that impacts the people who are also in the long-term care facilities. So looking at Saskatchewan rates versus Canada, we are unique in Saskatchewan in the sense that the majority of our cases of tuberculosis are in the First Nations population. So, which is the blue color. So in Saskatchewan, 86% of our cases are in the First Nations population, 9% in foreign-born, and 5% in Canadian-born non-Aboriginal. Then you look at the rest of the country, 66% are from the foreign-born population, with 21% amongst Canadian Aboriginal, 12% in the Canadian-born non-Aboriginal, and 2% are unknown origin. So in Canada in 2010, there were 1,577 new cases of tuberculosis. And this compares to, say, the world rate of 8.8 million. So we're actually, when you think of it, we're really pretty good in Canada here. But with that case rate, that gave us a case rate of 4.6 per 100,000 population. And the 25 to 34 age group comprised 18% of the cases, but the 74 years and up age group comprised a larger portion, 9.6% was what the case rate was. And then here's this graph is looking at age as well. So in the younger years, under 14, the rate is quite low, goes up in the 25 to 34, even 35 to 44, drops again, and then goes back up again at 75 plus. So what are the risk factors that are associated with the development of active TB, so or reactivation of latent TB? Well, the Canadian Tuberculosis Standards gives three categories of risk: high, increased, and low. So this is a guide to consider when you're dealing with patients in long-term care. So this risk factor is based against someone who would have no risk factors. So HIV and AIDS top the list, transplantation related to immunosuppressant drugs, silicosis, chronic renal failure requiring hemodialysis, carcinoma of the head and neck, recent TB infection for less than 2 years. And the reason for that is that there's always a concern that the TB was treated properly and that the bacteria was totally eradicated. Fibronodular disease on chest X-ray. So increased risk factors, treatment with glucocorticoids, tumor necrosis factors, so medications for arthritis, colitis, those type of medications. Diabetes mellitus, if the individual is underweight, so less than 90% of what their ideal weight should be. 0 to 4 years of age. Cigarette smoking, and then granuloma on chest X-ray. So low risk is someone who has latent TB infection, so they have a positive skin test, but they have no known factors and they have a normal chest X-ray. So determinants of transmission of disease, there's various things to look at. Looking at susceptibility of the individuals who are exposed. So what is their general health like? How is their immune system functioning? How contagious is the patient? Are they coughing a lot? Are they mixing with other people? What's the infectivity of the strain that this index case would have? Also looking at extent of exposure, duration, frequency, intensity. So are there other people who are residing in the same room? Is this individual in a room by themselves? How often are they out mixing with other people? Environment, so air circulation, ventilation, proximity to the source. These are all factors that impact on transmission of disease. And the other factor, which too could be included, is the effectiveness of treatment. So if someone had treatment recently or they're on treatment, are they getting all their meds? Have they completed their course of treatment? Was it inadequate treatment regime as well? Preventing transmission in long-term care, there's two facets to look at. One is from the resident side and the other is from the staffing side. So everyone going into long-term care should have a chest x-ray done with either prior to admission or shortly after admission to long-term care. Baseline two-step TST skin testing is not warranted any longer unless the population that the long-term care facility is serving is considered at high risk. So if there are lots of new Canadians that this community or this facility is serving, if it's a high-incidence Aboriginal community, former urban poor, or if a lot of the clientele are HIV positive. So, and as well, it's not necessary to do annual screening of the patients as well each year, unless there's been an exposure or a case where it needs further assessment. So, and always the big piece which comes back from our nursing days is doing the assessment. So what's the history? Have they had exposure to TB? Have they ever been treated for TB? Have they had contact? So for healthcare workers, and that includes volunteers as well, because they also have contact with patients and they're working within this environment, there needs to be good TB infection control policies in place. Two-step skin test at the time of hire is recommended, and I think probably most health regions have that as their occupational health and safety status. If someone has a negative TST or if their status is known, they really need to be tested. If someone has a positive TST and it's documented, that doesn't need to be repeated. Annual screening depends on the area in which people are working. So if someone is working in a high incidence area such as emergency, intensive care, or in the bronchoscopy suite, working with infectious patients on a ward, respiratory therapy, those are the individuals who should really have annual testing if they do not have a positive skin test. But annual screening depends much on the occurrence of TST conversion in the facility. So if it's a low conversion, so if people were have been staying as negative whenever they've been tested, or if they're negative and they're converting to positive, then the annual testing should really continue. Also, N95 respirator masks. Staff should be wearing N95 respirator masks if they are exposed to tuberculosis. Everyone should have the respiratory fit test done and be retested according to whatever the facility standards are to make sure that the masks do fit. Education of staff, that's always important so that people understand what is TB all about, how is it spread. And staff should be instructed, too, if they have any symptoms that they need to report and need to head to their physician. So clinical presentation of tuberculosis, so of active disease, and this is talking about pulmonary disease. These are the first three, cough, which is persistent, unremitting, that lasts for 3 weeks or longer, fever for 7 days or longer, or a pneumonia that just is not resolving. These are the early signs of tuberculosis, and that's when we strive to find these cases so that we can not only prevent the person from becoming more acutely ill, but also prevent and interrupt transmission. Symptoms of hemoptysis, night sweats, weight loss, anorexia, fatigue, they're seen in the later stages of disease. But if people have, TB that settled in a joint or in a lymph node or in kidneys, then they're going to present with different symptoms. So it's not always consistent in how it's going to present. Presentation as well may also be masked by other comorbid conditions. So if someone has COPD or they have chronic respiratory illnesses, that may impact on how easy it is to detect. But it should always be in the back of your mind. So management of TB, well, referral to a TB control program to be seen by a TB specialist. Transfer infectious cases to a negative pressure room, that's really, really a key factor. And I know a lot of times it's very difficult now because lots of facilities don't have many negative pressure rooms. But that should be a key point as infection control practitioners, that you're able to have some influence on the admitting process and how beds are used. Investigations take place, sputum specimens, or it could be, you know, if it's a needle aspirate or a urine sample or something like that. X-ray, CT. Symptom inquiry is really an important facet too. Physical assessment. All medications are given through directly observed therapies. So what we do is we take the medications to the patients, watch them, take them, see that they swallow them. It seems kind of like a very patriarchal type of approach to medication delivery, and I know we try to empower patients, but research has shown that DOT is the most effective means of ensuring that people complete the treatment. And directly observed prophylaxis is used as well in the same way as directly observed. Contact trace, that's a big job, which we'll talk about later in the case presentation. So when we look at contact tracing, we look to see who would this individual have spread the disease to. So looking initially at the people who have the closest contact, looking at a minimum of 8 to 10 hours in 4 weeks. Initially, we look at the very inner, if you look at as concentric circles, looking at the inner circle as being people who have contact on a daily basis. They may live in the same house or spend a lot of time together working together. Then we look at people who come into the home or have a little less contact but still are fairly close. And then look at casual contact, so people in the community they may play bingo with once a week or something like that. And then within each group, there's also the risk factors as we're that may influence someone's potential for developing tuberculosis. So it's looking at what are the risks and how close is the contact. So this leads into the case study presentation. So this was a gentleman in his 70s who admitted to hospital. He had a decreased level of consciousness, possible sepsis, possible GI bleed. His hemoglobin was down to 89, fever, and probable aspiration pneumonia. So he was a very sick gentleman on admission. And he also had several underlying health diseases, including COPD and dementia. So he was really not able to give much of a history at all. He'd been in two long-term care facilities in the previous 14 months. And as I said, he was too ill to give a history. He had no family around, and he had limited documentation as to what his history was. He had testing done for swallowing problems and was started on antibiotics for aspiration pneumonia. Infectious disease physician saw and recommended that he have sputum sent for acid fast bacilli. So when samples are sent, they're sent for smear, which tells you that there's mycobacterium present and the amount. But when the culture comes back, which is about 6 weeks, that tells you what it is, that it is mycobacterium tuberculosis, and also gives what the sensitivities are for this this strain. So what antibiotics are they susceptible to? He was placed in a negative pressure isolation room, and chest x-rays that he'd had done, he had bilateral airspace changes, consolidation of the right upper lobe. He had a right hilar mass, which there was discussion that potentially he had malignancy, which, again, talking about other comorbid conditions potentially masking tuberculosis. He'd had a chest x-ray done 3 years previously, and there was no evidence of disease at all at that time. But a year prior to the admission, he'd had a skin test done, and it was 25 millimeters. Chest x-ray was done at the same time, and it showed that he had a right upper lobe volume loss with airspace changes and pleural thickening. No, there was no documentation at all at that time that the sputums were sent for AFB or that there was follow-up on this. So anyways, 3 days after his admission to acute care, he had a CT scan, and it showed dense consolidation of the right upper lobe with a cavitating mass, the right upper lobe, and pleural thickening. So cavitating mass is seen with the damage as a result of the infection and more advanced disease, and certainly it's greater risk for disease spread because they can hold, a cavity can hold millions of bacteria. It took, there was 12 days to get the third sputum sample back, so he had two smear positive samples, and on the third one came back that he was actually 3+. So TB control was consulted and medications were started, but he had difficulty, because he was so ill, he had difficulty with the meds, and actually his condition worsened and he passed away 2 weeks later. So then we started the contact trace. So with the work of the infection control practitioner to identify patient contacts and occupational health and safety with staffing, because he'd been in two facilities, it was a really quite a massive undertaking. The trace yielded 131 contacts. Of that, 20 were residents. There were 111 staff who were in contact with this gentleman. Skin test status, there were 69 who were negative. Positives were 50. And there were 12 that were unknown. So there were 12 staff that we were not able to follow up on, that either didn't have their testing done, either had the tuberculin implanted but didn't come back to have it read. So we don't know where these people are at. Then looking at contacts by age group, and what was really good is that there were no children on his contact list. So 25 in contacts in the 20 to 29 age group, then 30 to 39, 24, 40 to 49, there was 21, 50 to 59, 32, 60 to 69, 20 contacts, 70 plus was 8, and then one unknown. So we had a total of 131 contacts. So outcomes, of the 131, there were 12 who converted their skin tests. So on the first round of testing, there were 5. Who had been negative initially, and on the first round of testing, they converted to positive. The second round of testing, there were another 7 that converted. So 11 were seen in clinic, seen by our physician. One staff did not attend, so we haven't been able to follow that person. And out of all of this, we had one case that decided to be or needed to be prophylaxed, and that was based on her own risk factors. But there were no active cases, which was really quite amazing from such a large group of contacts, traces. And no part, children were part of the contact trace as well. So location of contacts. So just, I put this slide in just to give you an idea that how, because we're a very mobile population, and then also being a tertiary care hospital, that there are patients who come from all over the province. So we had six communities where individuals came from, and then one from out of province. The majority of the contacts were in Saskatoon, however, so they were local contacts. But it just gives you an idea of how it's easy for things to spread. And that's my presentation. I got lots and lots of time for questions.
Hi, I'm Nicole Poliquin from Montreal. I want to know if you recommend that the visitors or other people besides staff would wear the N95 because the ick is that they have not been tested, fitted.
Right.
Sorry.
Right. What we recommend is that patients and visitors, well, patients should use the surgical mask. It's really debatable whether visitors need to use the N95s. I know, like in acute care here in Saskatoon, we do use that. But as the fact that the masks are not really fitted properly, it's hard to say that they're actually doing an effective job. With the visitors, I know there's sort of two trains of thought. One is that for family who live with the patient, that they don't really need to wear a mask because they've already been exposed. If they're living with the individual, they don't need the mask. But as a policy in acute care, it's that everybody who goes into the room wears a mask. If patients go out of the room, they can just wear the surgical mask. Yeah. But staff should be wearing the N95s for sure.
I just have a question about your baseline x-rays.
Right.
I come from a long-term care facility where we have, we call it admit first bed, so it's the first available bed into the region, into the long-term care program.
Right.
We, in one building, we do up to 60 admissions a month, and not only do they get there, the next day the other facility is phoning saying their bed is ready.
Right.
So how do you manage something like that when you can't really do a baseline because of the quick turnaround?
Well, I guess ideally there's probably some type of nursing referral or admission. Would you have like a nursing history that would be started?
That would go with
the patient.
It's a
Right. Well, hopefully you've got family who can provide information. There's probably some type of a database or something that would follow with the patient. Not everybody needs to be considered as needing to have isolation right off the bat. I mean, initially, physical assessment is the biggest thing. Is the patient coughing? How long have they been coughing? You know, what's their general condition like? Do they have predisposing risk factors that may play into the fact that they may have had exposure to tuberculosis? Have they had a skin test done at some point? Do you know what their status is? And more important, though, is the chest x-ray. So what does the chest x-ray look with? So that would be something that should follow the patient through the process.
Just in follow-up to that, Eric and I worked together in our region. For some time in long-term care in our region, baseline x-rays have not been required, but we do have an admission risk assessment questionnaire on admission that's to be asked as a flag, but we have never routinely, and I've been working in long-term care a long time, have required that in our region, but certainly the requirement was to do the risk assessment and answering yes to any of the questions, contact either infection control, now that we're in long-term care. Prior to that, it was contact public health. That's what we use.
And certainly if chest x-ray is done, it's really key that they're followed up as well.
Hi, I just had something I was wondering if you could clarify. You said in some of those cases they converted, their TB skin tests converted,
right.
But only one person was put on prophylactics?
Right, because the other individuals were determined that they didn't have risk factors. So they were basically healthy, and they didn't have risk factors. So that's why there's only one person that was put on to prophylaxis. Yeah. Many people go throughout life with a positive skin test, but it doesn't mean that they're going to develop tuberculosis.
Hi, I'm Betty from Winnipeg. I just have a question about the chest x-ray. Is the chest x-ray a PA and lateral, or just a PA? Or
PA, lateral, and oblique.
PA, yeah. Lateral, and oblique, all three?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
Hi, Rudan.
Hi.
This is Masood. Actually, I'm from Saskatoon. And my question is if there is any easy way to discriminate between a positive skin test for a person who has been vaccinated.
Vaccinated?
Yes, and right. Or being in contact with a TB positive patient.
Well, with the BCG vaccination, that in Saskatchewan we discontinued that as of September last year. But depending on what age people would have had the BCG, by if they have it as an infant, by the time they're about five, the effectiveness of it has pretty well waned. Now I know in lots of countries adults are vaccinated with BCG at various times throughout their life, and maybe even more than once. So all the TST does, it's hard to know whether it's saying that people have been in contact with an active case or whether it's vaccination. IGRAS is a blood test that is available. We have not been doing this in Saskatchewan, but we are looking at heading in that direction. And that's a blood test. It's a one-time test, which is a great advantage over tuberculin skin test. Because when you plant the tuberculin skin test, you also have to get the patient back 48 to 72 hours later to read it or to find them. So sometimes that piece of it is missing. But that's something that we're looking at is because the IGRA does not, it's not impacted by BCG, so someone may have had BCG at some point in their life and it's not an impact on the test result. It's a resource issue as far as the cost of the test and also developing our protocol and getting our process in place. In Saskatchewan, the majority of our cases are in northern Saskatchewan, so there's the transportation, because there's particular steps with the IGRA tests that have to be met before it can actually be shipped to be tested in the provincial lab. So. Anyways, we're heading there, so that will hopefully answer your question.
Hi, great Hi. Presentation. I just wanted to add a comment to the N95 respirator use, and it was going to pop up earlier, but people are coming up. As a fit tester before my nursing career, basically if you're not fit tested properly and within certain timelines, it's as good as using a surgical mask from a cost-effectiveness perspective for bringing visitors in, you might as well put a surgical mask on.
Yeah.
And in terms of that as well, if your staff doesn't know how to properly put one on or take it off, it's also as useful as a surgical mask at that point. So that should be evaluated with your staff as well. And if you do have a case, to review proper techniques for putting it on and off.
Right.
Just a comment.
Good. Thanks. The Canadian standards talks about N95s for staff, but it's kind of there's no definitive answer whether it's N95s or surgical masks for patients and family. I think certainly with the patients, if the patients are out and about, they're more likely to take off an N95 because it's not a very comfortable mask to wear for any length of time, so they're probably better to be wearing the surgical mask. But as you say, proper fit and proper application is key.
Thanks for the presentation. That was very good. It's Cheryl Collins from Hamilton, Ontario, on long-term care. My question that we get asked often is about the two-step testing for staff.
Right.
So the Canadian standards indicate that once an employee has had a two-step test, as long as it's properly documented, that they only require one step after.
Right. Yeah. You don't have to repeat it. If somebody's had a two-step, and they still remain negative, you can repeat the test again, but you don't have to do a two-step. Yeah.
Good. Well, thank you. Thank you, Ruth Ann, for taking the time out of your busy day and that informative discussion, because we do see it from time to time, and your expertise is great.